the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Who Never Heard of Moses, was written by Joseph Mindell and is presented in observance of Passover.
This season, when remembrance links the ancient past with the present moment, and all of the earth's remote places with each other, we mark the location of Egypt in the geography of the human spirit. For we are required to remember that from the beginning, in every generation, men who desire to be free have been denied by pharaohs the freedom to choose how they will live.
I will also say it. Whoever cannot choose is not free. It is a fact to be remembered.
Facts are neutral, or else they are not facts. But men are not permitted to be neutral, for the facts they learn are sterile unless they are fired by passion, by judgment and intention, unless their meaning is enlarged to human dimensions.
If you call me Semyon Kalmanovich, it will do as well as another name. On a spring day when Moscow is at its best, I strolled on Gorky Street with my daughter Rosa, surely the loveliest 18-year-old in Moscow. Suddenly, at a thought that came to me, I stopped.
What's the matter, Papa?
Come, Rosa.
It's not time to go home.
We are not going home. We'll turn down this side street.
But I want to look in the shop windows on Gorky Street.
Never mind. You can come back another day.
Where are we going?
I want to show you where I lived when I was a child. Come. There, Rosa. That little house.
That's where you used to live?
Oh, no. When my father could find 9 other Jews, they used to hold services here. Our house was around the next corner.
Wait for me, Papa.
I'm sorry. I'm walking too fast for you.
The streets are narrow and they wind in and out. For a minute back there, I lost sight of you.
Well, were you afraid I would leave you here?
Of course not. But then it would be easy to get lost here.
Oh, don't worry. I'll guide you through the streets like Moses leading his people through the wilderness.
Who?
Moses.
Oh.
I said, Moses in the wilderness.
Yes, I know that's what you said, but I never heard of him.
What?
What is it, Papa? What did I say?
I have a daughter. A daughter of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Who never heard of Moses. I'm not blaming Rosa, you understand? How can it be the children's fault? Is it mine? Could I have taught her half-remembered stories and ceremonies I learned as a child? Or perhaps you will say that we, my wife and I, should have sent her to a school. Then I must tell you that there is not one Jewish school in the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. That is a fact.
To understand this fully, let us just note some other facts.
Then begin with the internal passport all Soviet citizens carry.
It used to be said that every one of the Tsar's subjects consisted of body, soul, and passport.
Much has changed, and a good deal for the better. But that is still the same. You show your passport when you apply for a job, or for admission to a school, or for a marriage license, or an apartment. And one item of information in this document is nationality.
About 110 nationalities and ethnic groups are contained in the Soviet Union.
We Jews are classified as a nationality, and also identified as a religious faith. The first follows as a matter of law, the second from a voluntary act.
Of the 230 million people in the USSR, about 3 million are Jews.
In numbers, we are 11th among all the nationality groups. Well, let me add another fact. The conditions of our life as Jews are not in keeping with such an elevated numerical rank. As, for example, sending my daughter when she was a child to be educated in Jewish schools.
Of which there are none in the Soviet Union.
As I have already said, but simply to say it in this way diminishes the enormity of the fact. Well, let us suppose that you could hear a conversation, a purely imaginary conversation, I assure you, but if actually accurate, between me and an official of the Ministry of Education.
Yes, comrade. What can I do for you?
It's about my little girl, Rosa. Say good morning to the comrade, Rosa. She's very shy.
If you wish to register her in a school...
Exactly.
This is clearly the wrong place.
Comrade, does not our Soviet Constitution state the Communist Party guarantees the complete freedom of each citizen of the USSR to rear and educate his children in any language, ruling out all privileges, restrictions, or compulsions?
Yes, but...
Has not the party stated that the parents themselves have the right to decide in which school, with what language of instruction, they will enroll their children?
Did you come here to tell me what everybody knows?
Well, I came on account of the constitutional guarantees. I want to register Rosa in a Yiddish school.
Yiddish? There aren't enough of you Jews who speak the language.
Well, according to the census, almost 500,000 Jews registered Yiddish as their mother tongue. I happen to have with me the official statistics.
Never mind.
Let me see. Here it is. There are 135,000 people of the Kumyk nationality, and they have their own schools. So do the 25,000 Nyets people, the 15,000 Kantis, the 6,300 Kuryaks.
That's enough. There's no use arguing.
Oh, then I won't argue. Not Yiddish. Let it be a school in another language. Say, Russian.
Now you're being sensible.
But a school in which Rosa can learn Jewish history, culture, and literature.
You are foolishly persistent, comrade. Perhaps you do not know how close you are to being in serious trouble.
I know, comrade. Even in my imagination, I am frightened.
The danger is not imaginary. Despite the guarantees of the Soviet Constitution, the threat of swift punishment hangs over those who question official government policy.
And if you question, the answer is still no. No religious schools, which are suppressed long ago, no instruction in Hebrew, no schools in Yiddish, the language of the Jewish masses, no Jewish schools, not even one in all of the Soviet Union.
There are other ways in which a people may transmit from one generation to the next its cultural, historical heritage.
Well, you are thinking, no doubt, of the printed word, the newspapers, magazines, books.
There is an official government policy for these as well.
The same policy for which I list the same dry facts. There is not a single Jewish daily newspaper in the USSR.
25 other national groups, totaling 500,000 people, have 17 newspapers. In the last 5 years, 7 books in Yiddish were published. In the 1 year, 1964, 13 million copies of 233 German-language books were published. The number of Soviet Germans is one-half to two-thirds the number of Jews.
As for magazines, there is one, a Yiddish literary monthly, Sovietish Heimland, which reflects and repeats the government's policies.
Other cultural institutions remain to be considered. Jewish libraries.
No libraries.
Radio and television broadcasts.
No.
Jewish music and orchestras.
No.
Theaters.
Theaters. There used to be 10 permanent theater groups, including our famous Jewish State Theater of Moscow. Gone. All gone.
Actors, writers, directors, those not liquidated with their theaters, were scattered. Occasionally, a traveling variety show is organized.
Ich will euch etwas erzählen. Letzte Woche bin ich gewesen in Paris.
What did he say, Papa?
He said last week he was in Paris.
Oh, why are they laughing?
In Paris hat er mir genommen auf den Weißsäulen. Warum auf den Weißsäulen? Ich will ansagen, Menschen, ich hab gesehen Rothschild's Cave.
In Paris, they took him to the cemetery where he saw Rothschild's tombstone.
Was kann ich ansagen? Groß wie ein Haus von weißen Steinen mit Gold und Silber, ihr Herz wiegen. Those hands gelaine!
Tell me what he said.
He looked at the Rothschild's magnificent tomb, big as a house, made of marble with gold and silver, and he thought, that's what I call living. There were other people beside my daughter, Rosa, and some not so young, who did not know Yiddish. I wondered why they came to a performance in a language they could not understand. But it is also possible to wonder why, one Saturday morning, I stood at the door of a synagogue.
Yes?
Am I late?
The services have not yet started.
Then, if you let me in...
Why?
Well, what do you mean? Why does anyone come to a synagogue?
Well, for a number of possible reasons, my friend. If you're a Jew, for example, to pray. If you're a spy, then to observe and report.
Are you serious?
Unfortunately, it is a serious thing, but for myself, I'm old enough so that I take very few things with entire seriousness.
Well, what could a spy find to report?
Who is in the congregation, what is said in the sermon, how much money is collected for charity, who speaks to foreign tourists, and other important matters.
I don't know how to convince you that I'm not a spy.
You can. But come in, come in.
Thank you.
For what? If you're a Jew, you're welcome to the congregation. If you're a spy, well, the Lord tolerates you. I won't be more particular, only a little careful. And what are you waiting for? The services will start soon.
It's been a long time. I've forgotten the prayers.
If you're looking for a siddur, we have none.
A synagogue without prayer books?
The government has promised to print the new siddur.
Ah, that's good.
Yes, it's been going to press now for a number of years. In our congregation, we often discuss the question as to which will arrive first, the new siddur or the Messiah.
There is a thoroughness about the official government policy with regard to Jewish institutions. Nothing is overlooked.
Not only is the Jewish community forbidden to print prayer books and Bibles, but also to produce prayer shawls and phylacteries.
The USSR is committed to atheism, but in principle, the state grants freedom of religious worship and equality of all faith. Practice is not in accord with principle.
Unlike other religious bodies, Jewish congregations are not permitted to join together in a central coordinating council. We must exist in isolation from each other.
Nor may Jewish congregations have formal official contacts with Jewish religious groups abroad.
When I was growing up in Moscow during the early years of the revolution, there were synagogues in many neighborhoods. Now, there are only three in the whole city.
10 years ago, there were 450 synagogues in the Soviet Union. They have been closed by the government. Until today, there are not even 70.
Well, just think, if only half of the Jewish population ever attends services, it means there's only one synagogue for every 22,000 Jews.
Even for these few synagogues, there is the problem of providing rabbis. In other faiths, there are seminaries for theological students who are even given the right to study at foreign institutions.
The only yeshiva for training rabbis is in Moscow. An irrelevant fact, since it does not function.
I beg your pardon. That is not quite accurate.
No?
No. No, I'm a student at the yeshiva.
Well, then why aren't you in Moscow?
Well, you see, I went home to vote in the elections.
Well, naturally, every Soviet citizen is required to vote.
I've been waiting for permission to return to Moscow. That is, I have no housing permit, so even if I went back to Moscow...
And the other students?
Well, it's the same with them. What I mean to say is...
I understand. What you mean is that the yeshiva does not function.
While there is no Jewish higher or elementary education, Soviet universities are open to Jewish students with certain limitations.
Yes. We are, as a Russian poet has written, invalids of the fifth grade. A condition arising from the fifth line in the passport where one's nationality must be filled in.
There is a Jewish quota in all universities, as well as in some categories of employment.
In the Communist Party apparatus, for example, in the higher ranks of government service, that is, in most vital decision-making positions.
Pogroms in Kishinev and Homiel 65 years ago are still remembered by the descendants of the victims and the perpetrators. It surprises no one that active anti-Semitism lies just beneath the surface of Soviet society.
And breaks through often enough with attacks on synagogues, distribution of anti-Semitic leaflets, and the old accusation of the blood libel.
The facts accumulate, and the pattern is evident. By deliberate government policy, the Jewish community is isolated and lives in fear and insecurity.
And hope. Fear and insecurity, but also hope. You'll find them all if you walk in the streets of Moscow as a tourist. Wear a button on your lapel, a large one with Hebrew letters spelling out Shalom. Then everyone will know you are a Jew, including the police agent in plain clothes. For instance, someone may notice the newspaper you carry.
It's in Yiddish, a Yiddish newspaper.
But don't hand it to him.
He's watching. You want to get me arrested?
The indignation is not for your benefit.
Listen, when you turn the corner, let the newspaper fall out of your hand. I'll find it.
Another may walk beside you halfway down the street before he speaks.
Is it true that Israel has beaten back the Egyptians? It is. God be praised.
A third may give you the cover of a matchbox. Take it.
I have put down my name and address. Will you write to me?
And there may be still another whom you didn't notice. But later you find a slip of paper in your pocket with a few words written on it.
Am Yisrael Chai. The people Israel lives.
Let it be clear. We live. We can find work and housing, go to concerts and opera, if that is what we want. Some of our children can be educated in universities, if that is what they want. In most ways, we manage to get along like any Soviet citizen. We can live, but not as Jews. I think how little a heritage I leave for Rosa. And I wonder what she will have for her children. And yet the inheritance may be more enduring than I know. For the past 3 years, on the evening of Simchas Torah, I have come to the square in front of the Moscow Central Synagogue. There must be 20,000 people here, mostly young people. Police are scattered around the edges of the crowd, but they are only watching. It seems as if all 20,000 are singing. Some the right words, some the right tune, but very few both together.
Papa!
No schools, I think. No books, no newspapers, no theaters, no prayer shawls, and hardly any rabbis, and yet here they are for Simchas Torah.
Papa!
Rosa! Oh, Rosa. Why didn't you tell me you were also coming here?
I didn't know it myself.
Well, do you know it now? Do you know why you came?
Because it's Simchas Torah.
So it is.
And I'm Jewish. Oh, Papa.
Why are you crying, my darling Rosie? You shouldn't cry on Simchas Torah.
Papa, I never heard of Moses.
Vayikra, Elav Elohim, Mitoch, Asne, Vayomer, Moshe. God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses.
Which word is it, Papa? Show it to me.
Here. Moshe.
Moshe.
God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people that are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt.
And he did.
Yes. Moses led the children of Israel out of bondage. Whoever is denied a choice is not free. In the Soviet Union, we cannot live as we wish to live, as Jews, nor are we permitted to leave. But there is a promise in the words I read to Rosa, and now she knows the words and the promise. It is no small inheritance.
In this season of remembrance, let it be told again that Moses led out of Egypt a people wanting to be free. And it may be that whenever a people desires the freedom to live by its own vision of man and God, it may be that they will find their way out of bondage.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address for 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Joseph P. Sternstein, spiritual leader of Temple Anshe Chesed in New York City. Rabbi Sternstein.
To live in freedom, how simple a declaration, how precious a yearning, how distant its fulfillment for, alas, so many in this vexing world. There are many who live, that is to say, who move through the biological or physiological epochs of life, individually or collectively. Their bodies function, but their souls atrophy. About such we speak today. We speak of some 3 million Jews in the Soviet Union, for whom the human tragedy shapes itself as a collective body, which is denied its full, wholesome soul and integrity as a spiritual and cultural self. Yes, there are those who assert that the Russian Jew fulfills himself in his identity as a Russian. He seeks no more, he wishes no more. Judaism, they say, is of no consequence to the Jew in the Soviet Union, of no relevance to his family and to his children. They say the synagogue is an anachronism which he rejects, the Torah a relic he rebuffs, Israel a land he scorns, and the Jewish people the world over a group unnecessary to him. They say more. Every opportunity for Judaism is his. Let him take it. Anti-Semitism is no more. It is outlawed. Rabbinical academies can be made available. Let him desire it. Prayer books will soon be available. Let him be patient. Hebrew schools there would be for his children. Let him just ask for them. What is the answer? Have you seen the Jew in the Soviet Union? His lips are sealed. His voice is mute. His hands hang at his side, and his feet do not move. But his eyes glisten with longing, and they pierce hearts. What is the answer? You say they don't want Judaism? We say, try them and see. Stop the wave of discrimination against them. Let them have prayer books in adequate quantities. Remove the spies from their midst. I would say more. Give them a chance to show their loyalty to a Soviet Union that will give them a chance to fulfill themselves as Jews. One thing is clear. We in the free world will never, never forget them. We will never mute our voices. We will never cease until our brethren in the Soviet Union will again be free.
Thank you, Rabbi Sternstein. Eternal Light program today was written by Joseph Mindell and was presented in observance of Passover. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Ralph Bell as Simeon and Guy Sorrell as the narrator. Others in the cast today were Fran Myers, Roger DeCoven, Gilbert Mack, Albert M. Ottenheimer, and William Mason. We invite you to join us next week for our next program, the second in the series, Man's Challenge to God, written by Joseph Mindell, entitled The Long Journey. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light is directed by Kenneth McGregor and is presented weekly under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.
This is the NBC Radio Network.